This morning we have a whole group of honored guests. We have, I'm not sure we have any aldermen. Do we have any aldermen from Wrightsville Beach this morning? Okay, they didn't make it. Do we have anybody from Wilmington here this morning? Yes, okay, thank you. We have commissioners from Jersey Beach, we have commissioners from Carolina Beach, and we expected a few of the commissioners from the county. But I know there's emergency meetings in Wilmington that was called.
Well, for staff, yeah, so I believe okay. Commissioner Zappel's on his way.
All right. So, also I would like to say that we've got all the town managers and quite a few of the town attorneys. So, and a couple of interested private citizens as well. We have other honored guests. We've got Senator Harper from the state. We've got Representative Ted Davis, who has represented us incredibly well. We have Charlie Smith, who's running for our district to replace Ted. We've got
Miller.
I'm sorry, Miller. I screwed that up. So then we have, and we have representatives from Senator Tillis' office, from Senator Burr's office, and from Congressman Rogers' office. So it's a good representative of people, not quite everybody we expected to see here this morning, but it's understandable. When we started this, things have really changed. When we started to talk about this in January, we set up an agenda. And of course, the big news now is the coronavirus. None of us expected any of that in January. So as we deal with that, and we'll talk about that a little bit today, there's just a slight change to the agenda. I'm going to have Tim, who has to get back for the staff meeting, I'll have him go first. He's going to give us a few minutes on what we can do as local representatives to deal with this. Now, the governor has told us, the county has told us, our EOC has told us, but I guess it wouldn't hurt to do it again. In any case, right now, though, let's go in that room and have a breakfast, and we'll get the program started at 9 o'clock. Be my guest.
Yes,
I think I'll go.
Congratulations.
You don't have to read that whole long thing, but you have to. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No, that's not the whole mayor. I was a thing.
They I think one of them. Thank you.
Tim Buckland, who's the Intergovernmental Affairs Coordinator for the county, is going to tell us a little bit about coronavirus. Tim?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Well, first, thank you for having me, and I want to say a special thanks to Commissioner Quasi for willing to switch this up. I do have to be back at the Government Center at 10 o'clock for a meeting of staff around this particular issue. But I do want to quickly brief you. Most of you are getting the updates I'm sending on a daily basis. If you're not, please let me know before I leave, and I will add you to the list of people I've been sending these updates to. We're trying to get them out to everybody so that there's a consistent, clear message from everyone about what this is doing and what it isn't. So very quickly, as of this morning, there's still no confirmed positive tested cases that we know of in New Hanover County. Most of you probably saw yesterday that Governor Cooper issued a series of recommendations, including advising organizers of large events of 100 or more people to consider canceling or postponing. And we saw that happen almost as soon as he was finished talking. As the Star News reported this morning, one after another, the cancellation started, including the Azalea Festival. If you have people calling you with questions about it, here's some guidance you can share with them. If people have symptoms, you know, if they tell you, what should I do? Tell them, call your doctor. Call public health. Don't just show up. Get guidance from your medical professional. Don't risk spreading what you have. If they have symptoms, they should stay home so that they don't spread the disease to other people. And people who are at high risk, and does anyone not know what the high risk is? Good. Okay, Senator Peterson.
I'm 65 and older.
It's those 65 and older.
Yes.
And people with underlying health conditions like heart disease, lung disease, or diabetes, you know, or those with weakened immune systems, you really should try to stay home as much as you can. Let the son, daughter, grandkids do the shopping for you. That way you reduce your risk of exposure. Now, at the mayor's suggestion, for the most part, I was willing to do more of a Q&A because some of you may have questions about what is the county government doing. And you don't have, maybe you haven't talked to me as much as some of the others in this room. So if you have some questions about what your county government is doing to this point, I'm happy to take the questions before I have to go. Mayor Buzinski.
Is the EOC activated or are we waiting for a case?
Great question. No, the EOC has not been formally activated. That said, county staff have been meeting on this and Tim will attest to it. We've been dealing with this and talking about it and planning for it for the last 3 weeks. Just as soon as cases started coming over to the United States, we said, we may not have a whole lot of guidance from the CDC or the state, but we're going to go ahead and get started anyway. So we have. Yes, sir?
Do we have kits, testing kits, available for Hamilton County, the health officials? I don't know the answer to that. I'm just curious. I know it's tough to get.
They may be, but we have decided to make our own. So we have kits, and then LabCorp has also been authorized to collect samples to send them out. So Senator Peterson and then Sue.
I'll defer to Sue for a good
one. Okay.
In a broader spectrum, with all of the cancellations, we're in the midst of just beginning the census. Has anything been done on a national or state level to pull that timetable back?
Not that I'm aware of. I think you're talking to the state staff in Canada for the census. No,
because it's a critical time period.
I agree. That said, the census for the first time ever is allowing people to take it online. So you don't have to go somewhere to take the census. You can do it by mail, phone, or online. Senator Peterson.
Okay, thank you. We know there's a large underserved community in New Hanover County.
Yeah.
Low income communities of color that don't have primary care doctors. That they can call if they sense symptoms. What is the recommendation to them when the governor is discouraging using public transportation, which they rely on as well? We don't want to see our emergency rooms inundated. If that's the only course they have, or
it's not. You can also call your public health.
Okay. Is there a hotline for that? And again, I'm not being critical, but I was directed to call the state DHHS yesterday and sat on the line for about 17 minutes on hold and finally gave up. I understand there's probably an inundation of questions from people, understandable. So how do we respond to that.
Tim can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's on our agenda today. To start talking about more ways to make information accessible to the public.
Because I know people want to help in that area as well. You've got the NAACP, you've got the Ministerial Alliance that's reaching out door to door, everybody everywhere. Just getting that messaging out what the alternatives are.
Okay.
You get a
that's great feedback. Thank you, Senator.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else? I'm that good. All right.
You mentioned we're making our own test kits.
That's to my understanding, yes. We have the ability to make them and then make them available.
Can you give us a projection on how many? And
I don't know how many exactly we have. Last report I got was that we were in the midst of making our own to prepare just in case the state or federal government couldn't deliver enough. But I don't have a number for you. If I said a number, I'd be making it up, to my knowledge anyway. Tim, Rob, if you've heard something else.
Tim, to be clear, correct me if I'm wrong, that we have the ability to test and to kind of eliminate the regular flu, but it has to be confirmed by sending it up to the state to get confirmation.
Yeah, we can collect the samples, but we don't do whatever it is the testing is. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
I'm not a lab tech. But we do have to send it to the state lab in Raleigh for confirmation or a negative result.
I mean, he is correct. If you go to the doctor to do a flu test, if you have the flu, everybody goes, you just have the flu.
Well,
if you don't have the flu, if it comes up negative, I guess that's
when you take that next step. That's what I understand it as well. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm merely a former reporter turned government official.
Wrong direction.
That's a whole lot better.
If I can add on to that, though, the commitment we've got from the state, though, is to do a 24 to 36 hour turnaround. So it's not like sending something up to the state and waiting 2 weeks to get
that's
the confirmation.
Correct. That's correct.
So
as we understand,
everybody's got to focus on it. Right?
Well, so that's why you saw yesterday all the presumptive cases. So basically, what Greg was saying is they do the flu test, and if you have the symptoms and it's not flu, then they say it's presumptive COVID-19 until they get tested. So if you were paying attention last night, the state came out and said there were 7 presumptive cases or 15 presumptive cases last night. By today, we'll know if they're COVID-19 or not. So you'll find out fairly fast. And during that 24-hour, 36-hour waiting period, you should be taking precautions, I guess, with COVID-19.
Yeah, I'll just echo that nobody here suggests panic or causing too much alarm, but this disease didn't exist 3 months ago, and now more than 130,000 people have been infected and more than 3,000 people have died. So it's something to take seriously and we believe prepare for. Is there anyone else? Because I don't want to take up too much more of Commissioner Pose's time. All right, thank you very much, everyone. And if you haven't signed up for information from me, please tell me, and I will get you on my list. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, I want to recognize now some special guests that we have. We have Chief Taylor, the state fire marshal, with us. And I believe, is it some of your staff with you today?
Yes, I represent the commissioner on the state fire marshal's side.
Okay. And of course, we have Commissioner Mike Causey and some of his staff. What I wanted to say is, first of all, I think we all have looked at a lot of information about Commissioner Causey. And as I look at your page, and there were a couple things on it that were noteworthy, but one that you didn't mention that I think I would mention. You've got 25 years experience in the insurance industry, and you're a veteran and a man of the people. And in my opinion, you proved that by being an honorable man and stepping up against corruption. So I want to thank you for what you did, what you faced, and how you conducted yourself as a state official during that whole process. And to me, that's the greatest
thing you've done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Clark. Thank you. It's good to be back in New Hanover County. We did bring a few folks with us. Marcia Kelly, your neighbor right down at Oak Island, she's our regional director. And we do have an office, a regional office in Wilmington. And Barry Smith, Barry's our resident Chapel Hill graduate. He's background is journalism, so he works for the department and does our press releases and photography. And Roger Blackwell from Randolph County works with Randolph County Sheriff's Department and for the Department of Insurance. The mayor already mentioned Brian Taylor. I stole Brian from Stanley County. Brian was the fire marshal for the city of Albemarle. And when I got elected, somebody told me I needed to go see if I could steal Brian Taylor. So I made a trip down to Stanley County, persuaded Brian to come up to Raleigh to head up the Office of State Fire Marshal. But it's an honor and privilege for me to serve as your insurance commissioner and state fire marshal. And I have made it a point since I was elected. One of the things I wanted to do was get out in the counties. And so we made official visits in all 100 counties in way under 2 years. The goal was for a year and a half, but then Hurricane Florence hit. That delayed us a little bit. But when I was elected and sworn in, I made three pledges. And number one was to fight fraud and corruption in the insurance industry or in any of the other areas that's under the Department of Insurance that we regulate. Number two was to cut the red tape and streamline the Department of Insurance to make it more efficient and effective for the people. And number three was to make the Department of Insurance more user-friendly. And I went around every division and I told folks, I don't care who it is that calls this office, if it's an insurance agent, consumer, they need to be treated with dignity and respect. And last year, we helped over 250,000 people in North Carolina that had issues of claims not being paid or something like that. And I've got a letter, I found it, I've been carrying it around, Ted, for a couple of months. But this was an unsolicited letter, and it came from Fairview, North Carolina, up toward Asheville. And apparently the guy's pretty well educated, he has a PhD. But his name, and this PhD just sent me this letter. It said, Dear Mr. Causey, I'm just writing to thank you. Said, for 5 months, I was frustrated, didn't know where to turn, and his insurance company was in a battle with another insurance company, and he named the companies, that his company was State Farm, the other company was Travelers, and apparently, he didn't give me the details, but I'm assuming he had some sort of traffic accident, and the insurer was with Travelers was at fault, but the two insurance companies were fighting each other, and this guy was caught in the middle. So for 5 months, he didn't get any money, he wasn't getting anywhere, and out of frustration, he decided to file a formal complaint with the Department of Insurance. And in his letter, he says, within a week, I had calls from both insurance companies, and I had a check. And yesterday, we were with another group of mayors, and I believe it was the mayor of Emerald Isle came up to me, and he said, I just want to thank you for what your folks have done. And he had a similar situation. 5 months, frustration, he calls the Department of Insurance, and he said, within a week, I had my check plus interest. And so we have all kinds of programs that you may not know about. But one of the best things I think that you need to know and tell your friends and family and neighbors is our lost life insurance locator. If somebody in your family dies, what's one of the first questions we usually hear? I wonder if Aunt Sally had life insurance. Does anybody know if she had any policies? Well, that question comes up all the time. So with this service that we offer, it's a free service, it's a lost life insurance locator. You give us the person's name and address and social security number if you have it, date of birth. We run a national database search. And last year, we recovered over $35 million for people in North Carolina that didn't even know they had insurance. Now, that's a big deal because it helps the family, it helps the economy. Now, there's times when people send us information to come up zero, but it doesn't cost anything to try. People have no idea what's under the Department of Insurance that affects your pocketbook every day. Now, if you go to the website, ncdoi.com, you'll see more than you want to see with all the details and information. But when you're elected insurance commissioner in North Carolina, you're elected state fire marshal. And that's a big deal because we have over 1,351 fire stations spread across 100 counties. We do more firefighter certification in North Carolina than any other agency in the world except for the Department of Defense. It's 54 different levels of firefighter certification. We do the fire ratings inspections. And one of my great honors is when I get to go to a fire station and give them a certificate that increases their ratings. We just did one for Morrisville, North Carolina this week. They went to a class one. How many of you know that we have law enforcement under the Department of Insurance? And this is trivia, but somebody might ask. North Carolina was the first state in the nation to put law enforcement in a Department of Insurance, and that was back in 1945. And this year, I tell you, might have been there, sir. This week, we had, they didn't come out right. I was going to say, Tim might have been there Tuesday when we had a celebration. It didn't sound like you were back in 45.
I'm old.
Not quite that, that's right. But this Tuesday, we celebrated the 75th anniversary of our Criminal Investigation Division. And it was the same day the governor declared a state of emergency, so we didn't know if anybody was going to show up, but we did have about 300 people come in to the Department of Insurance, and we had catered food. As far as I know, nobody got the coronavirus, but we'll see. We also regulate bail bondsmen, insurance bondsmen, collection agencies. We're the chief building inspectors for the state, so we regulate engineering codes, manufactured housing, your mobile homes, modular homes, the State Building Code Council, and the Department of Insurance is responsible for risk management for every building the state of North Carolina owns, and that's over 13,000 buildings. And one of the things that we learned from Hurricane Florence, that out of those 13,000 buildings, we only had 77, Tom, that were covered for flood insurance. And the other thing I learned from Hurricane Florence, and it was in every one of those 23 disaster counties, and side by side with FEMA, and I asked FEMA early on, how many flood insurance policies do we have here in North Carolina? Well, I was looking for this big number because we got 10.5 million people population, 3.5 to 4 million homeowners, and they said not very many. The total number of federal flood policies in the state of North Carolina at the time Florence hit was less than 135,000. Well, you run the number, that means 98% of the people in anywhere in the state had no flood cover. And what we saw when those claims started coming in, and I believe I remember 88,000 homeowners submitting claims on their homeowners policy that weren't covered because they were flood claims. Now, the good news is, since Florence, there's about 8,000 more people that have bought flood policies under the federal flood program. But we launched an initiative called the Flood Insurance Initiative, where we teamed up with insurance agents, and real estate agents, and we sat out across the state doing town hall meetings and had these flood classes. And if any agent or any real estate agent sat through a four-hour class, they would get continuing education credits. And we partnered with the North Carolina Rate Bureau, and they hired national consultants. And we've been working on this a couple of years, but last year we got the forms approved. And hopefully before the end of this year, we will have private flood insurance available through the insurance industry that has no limitation. If you want $1 million flood policy, you'll be able to buy it. They're working on the rates right now. We're hoping the rates will be more favorable than the federal flood program. And so it's been, that part's been a success. There's a lot of other programs I don't have time to go into, but we oversee 23 boards and commissions. Everybody wants to serve on the Beach Plan, and everybody wants to serve on the Fair Plan, but we have a lot of other boards and commissions where people are coming off every few months. So if you all are interested in serving or know somebody that is, just let us know. We have Operation Medicine Drop, which is a great program to get the prescription drugs out of people's medicine cabinets. And since 2010, when that program started, we've collected over 210 million pills out of people's medicine cabinets. On February 10th, that's a good thing. It keeps it out of rivers and streams and out of the hands of teenagers or children or drug dealers. On February 10th, up in Craven County, Sheriff Chip Hughes and I did a drug take back event, and we had a huge response from the public on that. We have a program called Safe Kids North Carolina, where we give out child safety seats. We teach young mothers how to properly fit children in child safety seats. And according to the Highway Patrol, 90% of the children that die in traffic accidents die because they're either not in the child safety seat or not properly fitted. We have injury prevention for kids. We have the SHIP program, which is the Seniors Health Insurance Information Program, with 1,000 volunteers all across the state. And we helped seniors last year save about $60 million on prescription drugs and helping them with their Medicare. Marcia Kelly has a strong background in that, if y'all have any questions on it. There's all kinds of other things that we do, but that just gives you an overview that I bet most of you didn't realize we did all of those things. We are working with the governor and emergency management on this coronavirus. We have emergency management folks. And Brian was telling me this morning that right now it's a level 4. Brian, you got any updates from the Office of State Fire Marshal? We got some of our firefighters here. Now, I do want to thank all of our firefighters and first responders and their families for their sacrifices and all they do every day. Brian, just give us a quick update on them.
Of course, we are very active in concerns. I've been receiving calls on warning about how local jurisdictions have handled going out and doing their inspections or routine inspections and some of their responses. Matter of fact, when I walked in the door, City of Charlotte called and asked because of some of their requirements, and spoke with the commissioner earlier this week, and some of the requirements we have on rating the fire departments is that, you know, of course, being under state of emergency, we don't necessarily look at the minimum response and minimum staffing levels. And of course, we're not going to be looking over the shoulder of local jurisdictions when it comes to the inspections that's required by the state mandate. So we've relaxed a lot of those, and we want to encourage that the 911 facilities vet a lot of these calls to minimize the exposure to first responders. You know, a lot of times, you may have cities, and I'll use Wilmington for example. They may respond on a medical call with 4 to 6 people in a truck, and you're exposing, you know, 6 folks. It's going to go back and take it to possibly 10 more, and it's just going to go from there. So we've encouraged to minimize response on calls, starting with the 911 call, all the way through the day-to-day activities that's required from inspections, plan reviews, and things of that nature. So we are actively working and trying to be a resource and a clearinghouse for the local jurisdictions throughout the state. I'll be glad to entertain any questions that you may have about the response to your fire service.
Yeah, hit us with any questions you got. We'll do, we might not answer them, but we'll do the best we can. Tom, good to see you back there.
I would like to thank Representative Davis. I know last session we were looking at, Wilmington Fire Department has been actively looking at us trying. We rate every fire department in North Carolina except for those over 100,000. And I know there has been a push for us to look at that. Wilmington just received their latest inspection from ISO, which was a class 2 rating. And so there are some cities looking that they would like for us to take over their inspections program. There was some resentment originally for some of the areas in the center of the state, but I think they're now looking is that they want to compare apples to apples, and that's one of the reasons that the fire industry pushed for the legislature and Department of Insurance to do those inspections. I come from a mid-sized department that was over 20 years of being inspected, and that affects the homeowners because we want to reduce their ratings. And Commissioner, and my goal is to look at doing 5 to 7 year inspections that can affect because cities grow, their equipment enhance, and we want to give the full benefit to the policyholder as much as possible. So that's why we took over that program. It's been very successful so far.
Anybody got anything? This is a good group, maybe. I like it. They're all happy. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming and spending time with us. There's a lot going on in your office, and I'm sure your staff is not necessarily large enough to cover everything you need to cover. But if you could you give us the, or maybe you could have your staff send to Mandy or one of our staff some of the things that you have open opportunities on, unless that's all on your website.
Well, what we ask people to do is send us their card, contact if they're willing to serve, and then when something comes open, we'll contact that person to see if that's something they would be interested
in. All right. Okay. So there's an opportunity, ladies and gentlemen. I know you all serve already, but there's an opportunity there to serve some more. We move now to the legislative updates. And Ted, I mean, you leave big shoes to fill. I'm really a little bit in New Matt because we don't have you anymore. But if you would like to share with us maybe what are some of the legislative updates, or I'd appreciate it.
This is always a great meeting. I've always enjoyed it through the years. It's just a great chance for three beach communities to get together and share their concerns and issues that they want to have addressed so that we can all hopefully be on the same page. And Commissioner Causey, I really want to thank you for being here, Chief, you being here, and thank you for what you do. I guess the main, well, one of the things, to touch on what the mayor said, I will no longer be representing Carolina Beach and Terry Beach after December. I really am going to miss that. Carolina Beach and Terry Beach are very special to me. I grew up in Wilmington, and I've really enjoyed representing you, and I've enjoyed trying to help you as much as I could get legislation done and get appropriations done that I was asked to do. And even though I may not be representing you as your representative, I certainly will have your back. I'll never leave you dry. Because y'all really do mean a lot to me. Unfortunately for Washington Beach, I guess I'll keep representing you, so hopefully we can keep things going there. I guess the one thing I'll touch on that a lot of people are concerned about, as you know, every biennium that the legislature's in session, a long session and a short session. Well, the 2019 long session did finally get over in January of 2020, so it was truly a long one, but we're getting ready to go into a short session. Usually the main reason you have a short session is to tweak the budget. Excuse me, but there are some bills that were still in effect may cross over from the long session that may or may not be addressed. But one thing I can assure you, having spoken with the speaker, of the house, and that is our thoughts are to get up and get out. We really are truly going to have a short session and hopefully be through by the end of June. So things will be moving very quickly. The main concern that I have is the budget. As you know, we had a good budget. A lot of good things in that budget. I worked very hard and got a lot of appropriations for your district. The aquarium, Fort Fisher historic site, search and rescue, which affects all our fire departments and rescue departments and throughout the district. And as you know, that budget was vetoed by the governor. Also include teacher raises, state employee wages. I mean, it was a great budget. And because unfortunately, that is tied into the governor's desire to have full Medicaid expansion. And I can tell you right now, it's not going to happen. The Senate has made it very adamant that Medicaid expansion is not going to be voted on in the Senate. The House, we are entertaining the possibility of one Medicaid expansion bill, but it's not gaining a lot of favoritism because it would actually require people to get a job if you're able to work. But Democrats don't want that. And I'm not picking on Harper, or I'm just telling you the truth. We all know he's a Democrat. I'm not picking on Harper.
We're here to debate.
Y'all know me a long time. I just tell you the way it is. I just tell you the truth. So, and also, it would require an individual. This is really designed for the people who make too much to be on Medicaid, but not enough to be able to afford their own insurance. So the employment was one of the requirements. The other is that they would pay a very small portion of their salary towards a premium. I don't want that. So you've got the far right Republicans that really don't want any kind of Medicaid expansion. You've got the left, the Democrats, well, they don't want all the requirements. So we're really in a dilemma in the House whether or not we can even get it passed. But even if we get it passed, the leadership in the Senate, which is Republican leadership, has said we're not going to do it. So what the House and the Senate did after the veto could not be overridden, as you all very well know, previously the Republicans had a veto-proof majority. What that meant was is that there were enough Republicans in the House and the Senate that we could override any veto without worrying about whether or not we had any Democratic support. Well, we don't have that any longer. So we were not able to override the veto on the budget. So we started doing little mini-budgets and trying to address things that we really thought were the most important at that time. And some of those got vetoed, and some did not. So hopefully when we go back, the Senate only needs one vote to override the veto. They may or may not get that. If they do get that additional vote, which would have to come from a Democrat, if they were able to get that, the veto would be overridden and we're in life to win. Everything would be great. If we're not able to do that, then we've got to look at some more additional mini-budgets that hopefully number one can be passed, and then number two hopefully will not be vetoed. So that the funding for search and rescue, which I fought hard for. We actually, in this budget, had recurring for the first time, recurring money for search and rescue. So it's very important that a lot of these things get done, and hopefully will get done. So if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer those. But once again, you can tell your family to sleep well this summer because we will not be in session. So the old adage said, no man, woman, child, or dog is safe when the legislature's in session. So hopefully it won't be too long this time. I'll be glad to answer any questions if you have any. Okay. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. Senator Harper, if you would tell us about your legislative priorities. You know, I do have to tell you that between these two men, they really reach out and touch base with me and I assume with all the other mayors. We are very fortunate to have people who are so attentive to our needs. Not necessarily the party needs, but to our needs. I've never failed to have them both give us their time and their best.
Thank you, Mayor. Secretary Clausen, and all the elected officials here, and town employees, and everyone that's here. My name is Harper Peterson, Senator from District 9 in Ivory County, a freshman. I'm new to this arena, but I'm having a good time. It feels like a graduate course in war and peace. Not peace and war, I'm not sure. Ted, I appreciate your position, and obviously, as a senator, and our caucus has a different take on the budget. And we're not here to debate that, but I appreciate your position. I understand it's complicated. Representing United County and all the beach communities in the city of Bloomington, I enjoy the work. I really do. I enjoy listening and trying to work with you, and there are a lot of challenges we have. I'm just going to focus on two or three. I think Leighton is going to make a presentation on beach renourishment and funding, an update on that, so I will go into that. Correct, Leighton?
Yes.
Because you're at the heart of it, and that's important. That's probably our number one concern in terms of our communities, our economy, and looking going forward. But two areas that I've been working with local jurisdictions. One is opposition to the potential exploration of offshore drilling, gas and oil. And I'm happy to say I'm standing in Kure Beach, where back in 2014, you were the first municipality, I think, not only in the state, but along the East Coast, to pass a resolution in opposition to offshore exploration of oil. Correct me if I'm wrong.
We had a little bit of a mayoral issue at the time, but we were not the first, but we did jump in.
Right. Well, I'm happy to say that all 45 coastal communities are together on this in opposition, and almost a majority of counties, coastal counties, with the exception of Bender and Brunswick, have come out in opposition to this. Hi there. Kurtek. So, again, not to go into the pros and cons, but there aren't a lot of benefits to the potential disaster that could face us. I think we're celebrating, it's not a celebration, it's a time on the timeline, 10 years now since the disaster in our Gulf this month. So, and we know how long it's taken for them to recover, they're still recovering. So, one mistake, remember Charlie Reinhart, city council member, stating in a council meeting, one mistake and we would pay for years, and especially small businesses. Our economy, not only fishing, recreational, commercial, but tourism, is so dependent on a clean, healthy environment. So our insurance policy is to protect it, and that's what we're doing, trying to protect our environment, our economy, our quality of life. The second thing is the initiative, it's called the Wilmington Harbor Navigation Improvement Project, the deepening of the Cape Fear River from 42 to 47 feet. It's not only the deepening, but the widening. And we know we had this, went through this process back in 2000, when it was deepened 5 feet, I believe, from 37 to 42. This is a would be a federal project, and I know the beach communities, Curie, and Carolina Beach have been attending the stakeholder meetings with the Corps of Engineers and the State Board. And the concerns are not only environmental, and I could go through a list of potential impacts. We've learned a lot from 2000 in terms of salt intrusion, impact on our fisheries, flooding, erosion, but also economically. Is it in our benefit, to our benefit, to deepen this channel and compete with Charleston Savannah for these post-Panamax container ships? And you've seen them, pictures of them. They're over 1,300 feet, 160 feet wide. And this is an industry, it's essential to our economy, not only our state, but our national economy. But is that our niche? Is that where we need to be? if it demands deepening and having impacts, the environmental and economic impacts on our community. So it's a good discussion. It's unfortunately involved in politics in terms of an environmental impact study, which the Corps has to undertake. It's not a short process. It's a very comprehensive process. And the Corps will look at, it's called the NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act review. It'll take 2 or 3 years. It's kind of a backward process if you're familiar with this. Typically, if we want to deepen the port, state port, request it of the Corps gets permission from the Assistant Secretary of the Army. Congress approves it, allocates money for the Corps to do the study. And it's a little bit backwards where the state port has done the initial assessment or environmental impact study. And now the Corps has to review that, not to get into it, but it's convoluted and challenging. But there's a real desire to deepen this channel. And one other thing I forgot to mention about the concerns of specifically of Curry and Carolina Beach, and to a lesser extent, Risal Beach, the potential impact on our aquifer, I believe it's the Castellane Aquifer, that used depend on for your water supply. And we're right there touching it now. It's not like an eggshell, but it's the cap of the aquifer. And if we deepen it by 5 feet, we damage that aquifer and to the potential outcome. Those are good questions. And this stakeholder review, which involves not only all the environmental groups, but also beach communities, is a good back and forth question and answer. So it's an important study, big project, billions and billions of dollars that will take about 10 years to complete if it goes forward. So that's the other initiative that I've been participating in, asking questions and trying to get a better perspective on what's good for our district, our community. With regard to the coronavirus, I'm happy to say it sounds like it's not a battle or a finger-pointing process between Republicans and Democrats at the state level. I read something this morning, Ted, and Senator Berger, as well as the Democrat caucus, are looking to DHS for direction. They're ready to respond. I think it's going to happen sooner than later with regard to appropriation assistance. It's complicated as well. But they are in tune there in terms of we need to work together on this and drop the politics and all of that business. I'm assuming the state, the governor, or the legislature discontinued all meetings now. We have subcommittee meetings, so I won't be going, Ted won't be going for the right reasons, and that's probably going to impact the legislature reconvening in the end of April, which we're scheduled to do. It may happen sooner. We may be called or convened through the media to address a lot of these issues, but we're not going to take a 3-day suspension like the U.S. Senate is right now. I think we're going to be standing by to respond, and I think that's essential for us to serve you as elected leaders. So that's about all I have. Anybody have any questions? I know Mr. Fetzer is here, and he's a state lobbyist for the county. And we also have former representative, congressional representative Mike McIntyre, who's a lobbyist, and then Keith Smith, who is the federal lobbyist, that are working hand in hand with this, with your communities with regard to beach renourishment. That's funding that has to be reinvigorated, renewed in the next year or two. So, any questions for anybody? Any suggestions? I know I came overdressed. I apologize. It's embarrassing, but even Secretary Causey knows how to dress myself. Thank you very much.
We'll continue with the congressional updates. So, Chance, will you give some input from Representative Hauser?
So I know a lot of the things that are germane to Hanover County is going to be addressed very ably by Mr. Betzel, if it wasn't when I was outside. So I just kind of want to touch on a few things. Number one, it's on everybody's mind right now, coronavirus. As y'all probably know, if you were watching papers last week, Congress approved $8.3 billion for nationwide to assist in dealing with this matter. If you've got any further questions about that, please feel free to sign up for our newsletter or go to rouser.house.gov. We've got a list of resources and information there to keep you current on those sorts of things. Number two, probably something on a lot of folks' minds and ears, FIP flood insurance. That will be expiring in September. It is unlikely to get a full reauthorization, but I believe that we'll get an extension. So there's no need to panic there, but I know a couple of folks have asked about that. So they'll probably kind of kick the can down the road on that and give an extension rather than a full authorization. So those are really the kind of things we're talking about. I know for folks here on the southern half of the county, there have been some kind of issues with the Coast Guard about pulling beacon off one of the buoys. I am talking to them to see if we can ask them to reconsider that decision because I know it will impact our mariners down here, our folks that use the inlet daily. And we're also trying to talk to them about moving the buoys around a little bit more quickly, but they have limited assets with the Bayberry being used far and wide. So those are just kind of issues I wanted to touch upon. I know it's going to be elaborated on a bit more. Does anybody have any questions for me, specifically about our office while I'm here? Hearing none, I will yield my time, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. From Senator Richard Burr's office, Ms. Bradbury.
Good morning. Chance always covers everything pretty well, although you were brief this morning in anticipation of what Layton will have to say. And, you know, as I was thinking about coming here with you all this morning, and I think I've been here most of this 6 years you all have done this, I mean, I'm looking at pretty much the best educated group of representatives for their communities that we've got. You all follow all of this so closely, all of your coastal issues, and you know so much about it. It's been a good year for this area in terms of the borrow sites and the extensions on time. I'm sure Layton will go into that. And I want to say that you have such a resource in Layton that whenever we get somebody new on our staff that I don't feel like is up to snuff on coastal issues, I bring them down, and there are two places I want them to go to get educated, and the first one is right here in New Hanover County, and they get their Layton 101, and I feel like they can go on from there. I think a lot of things, there are things that have been, the Senate has been doing some business, it seems, small in the scope of things we're looking at, but Chance mentioned the Corona money. I want to say in our office, this is probably my swan song for indoor events. I've been reminded that I fall in one of the high risk categories, and so we're going to kind of scale back what we do. One of the things that our disaster recovery has taught us is we can work remotely, and all of our caseworkers have worked remotely a number of times in the last few years, and we're getting ready to do some of that again. We'll divide our staff and work half in the office and half remotely, so we're not cross contaminating each other, I guess, and we're also going to work with constituents not face-to-face. And we can all do that now. We have lots of experience with that. So you know, I think you have a, besides your local resource of Layton, we have, you have a congressional group that is certainly works together, works hard, has had some success with some of the coastal issues recently, and hope we'll continue to do that. Especially, I know some of the administrative things that they've worked on together, but Congressman Rauser has really carried the water on some of them, like the Cary side, like the Cary side or the Barrow side. Thank you. That's it. Anything else? Thanks.
Okay, from Senator Tom Phillips' office, council.
All right, good morning, everybody. Great to be here. My name is Adam Caldwell. I'm the Southeastern rep for Senator Tillis. Good to see a lot of familiar faces. And for those I don't know, look forward to getting to know you, working together. First off, I'd like to commend the county, just for New Hanover County specifically, for their response to the coronavirus. They have kept us continually informed. A lot of good information coming out. I will say that Senator Tillis has called and spoken with called on Leader McConnell to actually have the Senate go back in session, as it is reasonable and safe to do so, just so they can address this pandemic head on. Certainly don't want to steal any latest thunder. I had three brief points I want to go over. The first, we will likely have a Water Resources Development Act bill coming through this year. The last time that was signed was October 2018, and it's a big deal that deals with kind of projects that the Army Corps will be funding related to flood control, dredging, river locks, and ecosystem protection. So we're trying to make sure that the projects down here certainly get a look and consideration as that bill is being put together. And the second thing, we're in the middle of appropriation season right now, so big fun time. Certainly don't want to forget all of you here and projects up along the coast of North Carolina. And lastly, some of you may be familiar with the Great American Outdoors Act, recently introduced a few days ago, Senator Gardner in Colorado. Senator Tillis was a sponsor of that, and it does two significant things. The first one, it would provide recurring permanent funding for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, critically important fund and matching grants for the acquisition of land for water and recreation and protection of our parks and forests. And the second thing it would do was the National Park Service has a significant backlog, about $12 billion. That legislation would cut that in half. So hopefully that will move a little bit later this year, but significant step. And our office is always available. Be happy to take questions now or later. But I really want to thank you for having us here today. I always enjoy this breakfast and hearing about the issues going on. So, thank you.
Sometimes it can be a little tough based on what's going on in Washington, right, and a little bit of polarization. Right now, we do have a great resource in this county. And glory be, I don't know after how many years, Layton, at least 20 plus, you have watched over our beaches, helped us with permits, been forward thinking. People do talk about you. You are truly a resource. So Layton, come on up and talk to us.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, everybody. I appreciate your kind words. And in the future, steal all the thunder you want. That's seated. All right, real quick. As you know, Rice Beach is on a 4-year cycle. Carolina Beach and Curie Beach is on a 3-year cycle. Every 12 years, the coastal storm damage reduction projects maintenance cycle, they fall together.
FY22 is that year. If everybody plays nice, assume $10 million for Rifle, $10 million for Carolina, and $15 million for Curie. That's a total of $35 million. If everybody plays nice, the feds would pick up 20, the state could pick up 7.5, and the ROT could pick up 7.5. Those are our target numbers for FY22. Budget-wise. We have studies underway, the post-authorization change report for Riceville Beach's extension, the beach renourishment evaluation report for the Carolina Beach extension. Those have to be in the Water Resource Development Act of 2020 that were referenced earlier. We got good news night before last. The consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been completed. The Corps can check those boxes. They agreed with our position with some reasonable mitigation features. The Corps can now move forward to the director's reports. That's signed at headquarters in D.C. From there, they go to Assistant Secretary of the Army. Their approval for inclusion in the Corps' proposed Water 2020 plan that goes to Congress. That all has to happen. Still a long way to go, but we're a lot closer now that we've got that consultation complete. A couple other studies that are underway. The Rice Beach post-performance assessment is underway to determine if we can get additional material placed as a result of Florence impacts. We've also got two more studies that were funded through the Corps' FY19 supplemental budget. That's two new feasibility studies, two new 50-year feasibility studies, one for Riceville, one for Carolina. They have been kicked off. I'm going to jump to the inlets real quick. Masonburg Inlet's in pretty good shape. We've got a confined disposal facility where we put dredge material from the AIWW at the Shin Creek Crossing. That disposal site needs to be emptied. The Corps is working on options for beneficial use of that material. Carolina Beach Inlet, we've got an April and a July event scheduled. Mason's Inlet, we just relocated that inlet for two inlet shoulders, the health of the inlet shoulders. That was completed Sunday. Previous event was in 2016. $7 million project. Figure 8 purchased about $2.3 million worth of sand. The balance was proposed in a shallow draft inlet grant where the state would pick up about $3.1 million remaining, leaving Rice Beach Mason Inlet Preservation Group about $1.6 million. An improved effort from years past. That's all I got. Y'all have a nice day. I'll take questions.
Blake, is there anything that you need from us, or are you getting what you need from the beach towns and from the representatives to help you?
The second Wednesday of every month, we have a Port Waterway Beach Commission meeting at the Government Center. 4:00, it's open to the public. We have good turnout. We have good discussion. We see too much of each other.
I think the show was
our working relationship, the county's working relationship with communities, I think we're doing well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the only thing between you and the beautiful sunshine is now the mayor's corner. So hopefully we'll go through this pretty quickly. My points for the county. EMT support. We are coming up on season. We have riptides. We've had several drownings. We need EMT support, probably located on the island. We have a lot of folks come in here. They're not in the best condition, and they're not always in the brightest state of mind when they approach the water. So I would just say that the opportunity to get more dedicated EMT support for Carolina Beach and for Curie Beach would be greatly appreciated. The other item for the county, and I can spend a note on that, is we had a lot of problem during the last few hurricanes with the southern antenna. And when we lost cell service and we couldn't get service from the antenna, the county antenna, we wound up with walkie-talkies, 1960s and 1970s technologies to help get us through and to meet the emergencies that were generated by those particular events. So I don't know what the solution is, but we are concerned that we do need a solution for the tower. David?
Yeah, so just to add to that, Rod and other leaders, he's talking about the combined radio system for the county, so that's what he specifically talked about. Stephen Stills is aware of the issue, and the 911 center is, they work to address it, but we don't feel their addresses are sufficient at this time, so we're just putting them on your list. It's a known issue. We've been working through our fire services as well, our police, but during storms it gets worse. But even sometimes there's outage issues just during standard operations. That's really a problem.
Now for the state representatives, our court, and you did mention some of that, Harper. What I would tell you is that we want our court to be successful. We want to see economic growth in the area. We are supportive of what the court wants to do as long as we can answer the questions that are on the plate. There are several questions on the plate. One would be, with all of the additional freight that would come in, what are we going to do to get the freight away from here? We already have significant congestion. We already have problems with traffic from the port across the bridge. What are we going to do about that? I don't see any particularly state plans that are dealing with that particular issue if it comes to fruition. The other item about roads in particular is the fact that we do have 1.5 million visitors that are coming down to the state parks and the historical Fort Fisher. And that's a one road, two lanes. And that's a problem. And we get about 560 cars on a fully loaded day of the ferry. So I think we need to think about what are we going to do about roads, or we're going to need a heck of a bigger boat. Then lastly, to my beach compatriots, Wrightsville and Carolina Beach. We don't know what the impact is going to be with COVID-19. We don't know if people are going to say, hey, this is a great place, let's go out and sit on the beach, a lot of fresh air. In that case, we may not have any impacts to our economy. But it is also likely that people will say, we're not going anywhere this year. If that happens, our ROT is going to take a hit. There's a danger on 2012. There's a danger on the money we use from the ROT to support many of the things in town for tourism. And I don't know what the answer is to that, but maybe we should propose, as a group of communities, some type of leadership institute to say, how do we want the TDA to move forward with this? And how do we want to move forward with this? One, either we promote the health, and I don't know if that's the right thing to do, or what are we going to do if things do not come forward like we expect them to in every season? But I think we should have a plan for this, and we need to figure that out. So, in my opinion, that's all I have. I guess Leanne, would you go next?
So I think that you guys did cover most of what I would have talked about, but I will talk about what you just said in a minute, Craig. But I want to thank you for hosting us here today. And Commissioner Cosby, thank you and your team for taking the time to be here, and all our elected officials and our representatives. We really appreciate it. We started this several years ago, and we continue to keep it together, and it keeps us in networking and informed with each other. But, you know, and that's exactly what would be something we should probably talk about is sure, it's public safety is number one, but what do we do with the economy if that tanks? And how do we continue to fund our RAP, our sand? How do we put sand back on the beaches? I mean, I think that we have to be cautious, but we also can't spread fear. You know, we need to continue to stimulate our economy. And what about the jobs and the people that are working if those people can't pay their mortgages and their rents? And so we need to think about those things. And I'd be happy to get with you and our Rice Beach, and we can get with our representatives and talk about, you know, what would be a strategy to move forward with that. And I'll just say, you know, I heard something here today which really resonated with me. It's not about party affiliations. But what it is about is it's all working together. And that's exactly the kind of attitude that we need to have in our towns and in our country and everywhere, that we just work together and do what's best. So with that, I'd say I agree with you. And what we need to do, I don't know the answer either. But I do know that we need to probably sit down and have a plan for that. So, but anyway, but thank you all for coming. This is awesome. And we appreciate it. And the next one is?
Mayor Mills had death in the family. Wanted to be here, but he couldn't make it.
So. Gotcha. Okay.
Do we have any of the aldermen here who would like to say a word? Oh, you'd like to say, well, you're not actually an alderman, but you are a commissioner. So, Joe Dan, you want to say a word? Please stand up and talk.
Councilman Joe Dan Florence, Carolina Beach. One of the biggest things about these breakfasts that as a councilman who's been here now, this is now my third time attending this, is that we don't get adequate follow-up from these. We have a handful of random takeaways that we all take seriously as communities within this county and within the state. However, the downside is that we don't have true follow-up on these things. So in order to implement these things and try to take care of our community as much as we say we want to, just after this, it just kind of falls on deaf ears. And then next time we have a breakfast, it's whatever takes precedent at that time. Last year was the hurricanes. Most of that breakfast was talked about hurricanes and a little bit of the RLT on what to possibly do with that RLT. However, council members, we never get together with that county or with each other. The mayors, whatever's going on through there, instead of that follow back to us that says, hey, the things that we spoke about that we find to be as important within each other's municipalities, as well as that county, these are the direct actions we're taking moving forward. So what we're talking about today is, I love talking about these things. The thing is, where is that next step going to go? The thing with the Port Parkway, I'm only one of five, and I don't support it. They have no mitigation plan for if anything was to happen. Their biggest takeaways were, you need to work with your communities on how to use that water properly within one another. I didn't like that. I also didn't like the fact that the meeting that they gave us was at the Poison Waterway. That's just me, I'm only one of five. My biggest thing is just the takeaway. Not only that, but if we're only doing this once a year, we're not being sufficient enough for our residents. This is so important that we should be doing this at least twice a year, before summer, at the end of summer. The biggest thing is at the end of summer, we all know it's hurricane season. Are we giving enough information to our residents to be prepared before, during, and after? We weren't last year, and we weren't the year before. So we're racing around doing the best things we can. If comms are down, that's a huge thing. I was lucky enough that the year before I was part of that, I saw what you guys were doing from Curry. That's just my biggest thing, is that the follow-up and the takeaway after this. Where is that going to go, and how is that going to be trickled back down to us?
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have anything to say? Yes, Mr. Hannibal.
Thank you very much. Mayor, if you want to go up here, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mayor, for doing some, hosting this event. And especially inviting us, it's beautiful. It's not new anymore, but it's just such an improvement. It's a delight to be here. There are a number of things that came up. I hate to get a chance to say earlier, too. Especially dealing with the coronavirus and COVID-19, there's questions on how we get the information out. And there's one really key tool that's out there that I hope that everybody in this room knows about, but if not, let's try and push it. Has to do with the going to the county website and signing up for the text messages. It is so bloody simple. The nhcgov.com, if you go there, there's a big, you can't miss it, colorful thing that says coronavirus. You touch on that, it takes you right there, and there's a big red dot that essentially it says, push here and sign up. If we could all commit to pushing this out throughout our entire county, then you'll get the instant messaging that comes out, everything that's happened. I'd also like to reassure you that the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center of New Hanover County, is up and operating. We had our first group meeting last night internally and met with all the department heads of the entire county. The great push that you've heard some of today is really to take our county departments and where possible, use telecommuting, telework. In other words, stay at home if you can possibly. And those, of course, especially emergency services who can't, try and do everything you can, clean surfaces. And the key takeaway here for our county is social distancing, which is a new term. I don't think anybody of us had ever heard of 95 days ago before this whole thing started to take off. But I think being an internal optimist is a little kernel of brightness for us here in New Hanover County. Because the things we have to offer in this county are so much outdoor activities. That is the definition of social distancing. Our beaches, the river walk, the large outdoor spaces that we have here, and trying to think creatively among all the elected officials and those people who are pushing our industries here, I think is something that we can all do that's really positive. Because underneath this all, I'm just going to voice the fear that I know is here with all of us. It has to do with our economy, and specifically small businesses. We know that small businesses are the backbone of New Hanover County's economy. I'm talking about those that are, event planners, caterers, the service industry, hourly workers that we all depend upon here. These are the people who are going to be hammered. And, going all up, whether you're a large preschool, a gym, all of these, when we start really crunching down and stopping, gatherings of 100 people or more, they are going to be severely impacted. And I can tell you, as an owner of two small businesses, that my family cannot go for a month of being shut down without having serious impacts on whether or not we'll be able to make it. So for me, this is really personal, but I get it for everybody here in New Hanover County, and I know we all are grasping on that. With that being said, Commissioner Clausey, thank you so much for coming down. I just want to give one other shout out about, I'm so pleased to hear your listing of what the DOE, Department of Insurance, does. It is huge. As a builder, I thank you for signing my contractor's license every year, so I appreciate that. But the work that you do in the building and construction industry here in our state, especially here where we're very vulnerable on the coast, is major. And I know that you're continuing very aggressively and looking at all of our codes and keep us updated and keep us safe. So I thank you so much for your efforts in that.
Thank you. We built 78,000 new homes last year in North Carolina, so thank you.
Good news. Thank you. There are a number of other issues that are happening here in New Hanover County. Joe Dan, is
quick question.
Yes.
For county and state, at what point, if and when this becomes serious enough, then does the state and the county determine to close down schools?
That will be, of course, will take the school board as their own elected, newly elected body. That decision is certainly being discussed. There's nothing to indicate that they are planning that now. Certainly, you all know that UNCW has gone on an extended spring break at this point and now are recommending as much distance educating for their classes as possible. So I'll wait until we hear more from the New Hanover County school system. There are a number of other issues that are in the county here that all have kind of taken a back seat here, but I just want to touch on them briefly so you know that while this is all going on, we are working aggressively on all of this. Certainly the PFAS problem and emerging contaminants in our rivers and the pressure that we're putting on the EPA, and they are responding to come forward with standards, specifically the PFOA and PFOS. Again, this alphabet soup that none of us even thought about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and now it's part of our daily lexicon. Those are the two, PFOA, PFOS, are the two kind of major PFAS. There's a whole family of over 4,900, and still counting, of PFAS emerging contaminants that we don't know about. But if we can get standards that will allow the beginning of serious regulation of those contaminants in our drinking water, Also, HB 56, I know our state delegation, Ted Harper, working very hard for New Hanover County to get a handle on flow control. Again, another one of these issues you don't even want to think about. It has to do with our landfill and being able to control that to make it continue to be in the profitable center that it is for our in New Hanover County and be as successful as it is. And I thank you very much on the efforts that you're doing to find a carve out to us so that we can continue to operate, you know, in a profitable manner. Also, the way transit, which I know affects everybody in our county, as we go through the reorganization of that, so we can provide public transportation that's reliable and consistent, so that we can get from the southern part of the county to the northern part of the county, from east to west, to get up to the New Hanover, the Cape Fear Community College up in the northern campus, and to get out to the airport, to get out to the Veterans Administration Hospital. These are all really important. We're tracking that, and we're working on to try and find positive solutions. The Cape Fear Crossing, Craig, you nailed it. How can we continue to grow and be prosperous without a new bridge? Our Cape Fear Memorial Bridge is on a 10-year declining, you know, timeline here. We've got to do something. We're working with our MPO and the North Carolina Department of Transportation to come up with an alternative. Keep narrowing it down, but believe me, it has our full attention. We cannot continue to grow without it. On the good news side, you know, we have now, as of 4 months ago, we voted in a stormwater utility plan for New Hanover County and the unincorporated portions of this. I'm sorry it's taken this long, but it's an ordinance, for those of you who haven't been tracking that, will allow us to first get an inventory of New Hanover County that shows where our stormwater flows, and how it gets from one creek to the intercoastal waterway out to the Cape Fear River. Amazingly, we don't have that at this point, but we're developing it now with this ordinance passed. And we'll also come along with a series of crews that will help address some of the drainage, ditching issues, etc. there, so we can bring, hopefully, a better day to when we have another storm event, whether it be a hurricane or an unnamed, you know, rainstorm, which now these days, amazingly, can drop 8 inches of rain and have an unnamed storm. But that's our future. How that water will flow safely and without disruption to an appropriate area. Chance, you raise your hand.
I can't wait to see that get done, because I think it could have a great blueprint for our surrounding counties, because pretty much all of our districts.
That's exactly right. I'm all over it, and along with it, thanks again to our federal delegation for helping us get the EWPP, the Emergency Watershed Protection, $4.6 million to go in and clear out some of the debris that was being built up over the last few hurricanes so we can get things flowing again. Also on the positive side, 421, water and sewer, hot damn. You know, it's taken us how many years? 10, 15, 20 years, but we got it now. We got water and sewer all the way up 421 to the Pender Line. That's 900 plus acres that we're now open for business, open for development along the 421, and we're seeing those moves that are starting to happen. So I'm thrilled about that. I think you can tell we have a new school interim superintendent, Dell Burns, who we met at the commission level at our last meeting, who is going to come in and help right that ship. I think we all know that we need to turn the page on that, and this is the first step in being able to do that. So there's positive news there. And then Lock and Dam number one. It's where 80% of our drinking water comes from the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. Most of you know, we're working with the Corps of Engineers to find an appropriate home for it. My hope, personally, is it goes to the state and department DEQ, so that we'll have an entity that has the best for all those who share the water along Lock and Dam number one, number two, and number three. This is an issue I know some of you who are from out of town a little bit in the weeds, but it is hugely important. Again, 80% of our entire drinking water comes out of that Cape Fear River. And the Corps of Engineers, who has controlled those three locks and dams, is backing out of it. So all those locks and dams that create the pools of the water that we all need for the drinking water, that's what's at stake here. We want to make sure it gets in the hands of people who will handle it appropriately. With that, I'll stop. Greg, I apologize. I didn't tell you that we had a few things to cover, but I just wanted to make sure that there's a whole lot of good news that's happening along with has our immediate attention here. So thank you for your time.
Anybody else? Okay, any questions? With that, we will adjourn this special meeting. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all for sharing your concerns. And thanks for the time.